Welcome back to the Pod of Greed.
Welcome back indeed, guys. You might notice today that we have some new chairs.
Yeah, now we're gamers.
Yeah, these chairs come to us from eWin Racing. They wanted to reach out and sponsor the podcast, so we officially have our first podcast sponsor ever.
Woo, we sponsor y'all.
So, this is actually a pretty exciting week of news. There's just a bunch of, like, stories, most of them gaming related, but also a few little Yu-Gi-Oh updates and stuff like that. So, before we get in,
put your ones up.
Yes, ones in chat if you're Premier in the Premiere.
Rise up.
Likes and comments and everything else help out a lot as well. Let's hop in with the Yu-Gi-Oh news. So, first and foremost, there's not much like what I'd call direct news. We've been getting, you know, card reveals from Burst Protocol. I will say I was very pleased because Rescue Ace got new support and Exosisters got new support, and I play both of those decks pretty avidly.
I'm not going to lie, guys. It hurt my soul to see Paul get so much love from Konami just out of nowhere.
Yeah, they've been hearing my cries specifically.
I thought they hated you now.
But maybe more importantly, this week is the release of the Fallen in the Virtuous Structure deck, so you should be able to pick that up.
I'm copping one.
At your local card shop. I know we saw the reveals for that last week and talked about it, so there's not really too much new to share with that. But what do you think of the deck being all ultra rare and $20 as opposed to like the usual structure?
I only have to buy one of it, right?
No, it's still like kind of one of those you only. It's like it only has like one copy of things. So. But I guess, yeah, but the ultra rare part's like the premium.
See, that's that doesn't seem like very good value at all now.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be more similar to like the Tactical Tri decks since we're mostly working with reprinted cards anyway.
Yeah, there's only like a couple new cards, but there are alt arts, they are ultra rare, and it is a good, like, powerful deck when you have three. So,
but like 60?
I know.
I feel like they're really testing like the branded player's love of the branded like strategy because.
It does have that thing where I think, like, one of the cards can come, like, Starlight. Like, there's, like, a, like, promo pack, like what they did with the Blue Eyes.
But 20?
Yeah, it's
for,
high.
For a strategy that's already washed, like, if I'm being honest, like...
Well, oh, don't say that to the branded players.
Like, it's not... Okay, like, hear me out, branded players. I'm not... It's... I respect you and your deck, and I, and to some degree, I love branded. However... Branded is past its prime. Not to say anyone can't compete with it.
I mean, it's got new cards, like, and they're getting even more. But so, in theory, it will be a powerful deck.
In theory.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll say
so
this.
So we should pick up three copies of the $20 deck for the theory.
I know what you mean. Like, I think that it should have just... It would have been better to be 12, because... I don't know. Like, 20 to me screams like this should probably be, like, more close to, like... Tactical Tri levels of built.
Like, for $20 says to me, this deck better be tier one when Burst Protocol comes out.
And it could be.
I know it needs to be the new, like, hot thing. It needs to be the deck.
Well, speaking of decks, actually, we did get a bit of a delay on some. So, Konami said a couple days ago, due to delays in production, the release of Legendary 5D's decks, you know, that's the one that's got the new... Yusei structure that Power of Fellows, but then also like the Crow and Akiza decks have been delayed from November 7th, which is when they were going to release, to now November 21st. And this delay impacts English language product in North and Latin America only. So it sounds like actually EU is going to be getting this before us, which is rare.
So now we're behind the Europeans.
Yeah, because normally they tend to get screwed.
Usually it's supposed to be the other way around. But I mean, I guess I'm not too mad at it. It's not even a full month.
Mm-hmm.
Delays have been worse in the past, so I guess I'm not going to cry about it. It's just a shame because of the products coming out, that's the one I was looking forward to the most.
Yeah, I definitely think for more there's a subset of people who really love Branded to Death. But there's also probably far more people who just are like a 5Ds fan in some capacity.
I mean,
like
it's older
Yu-Gi-Oh, and like there are more new cards in the Yusei deck. Akiza just got support, so I don't know. I think that I think it's gonna be a popular product, and I've always liked the whole like three deck things. because I believe it's $30. Like, I think it's like $29.99 or maybe like $31.99 or something like that. So
somewhere close.
So yeah, like I think the value is probably, it's just funny because we're talking about like the $20 branded deck. I think that however much this is, this Legendary Decks thing, it seems like it might be better value.
Yeah, I mean, if you're essentially playing $10 per deck, I can't argue with that. That's solid money.
Yeah, I'm actually trying to see what the price is.
And it can help resurrect some like fallen 5Ds players and bring them into Genesis format.
Yeah, $31.99.
Yeah, I'm with that.
Pretty cool. Okay, next thing is, this is kind of like a little PSA. Yu-Gi-Oh! Early Days Collection is 40% off from now through October 30th.
Is it a PSA or an advertisement?
Well, I only say that because they tweeted it on the official Yu-Gi-Oh! Account. I will go out on a limb, though, and give you my personal opinion on whether or not you should buy it, which is, no. Not, okay. If you want it and you already knew you wanted it, great. Buy it. That's up to you. But I think that Legendary or Early Days Collection, for me, just kind of reminded me why a lot of those old games are very grindy and, like, the desire for them is, I think, kind of more like riddled with nostalgia rather than them actually being good games. I think the only good games in Early Days Collection are actually the non-dual games, like Dungeon Dice Monsters, that one board game. There's like a board game. I forget the name of it.
Is that Nightmare? No.
Nightmare Troubadour? Not Nightmare Troubadour. But there is a game, and it's like kind of more of like a party board game, like Mario Party vibes. Those games are pretty fun, but like the one time that I played or tried to play Dungeon Dice Monsters with Simo and Distant Coder and a couple other people, we were trying to do this like tournament on one of Simo's streams, and the online mode is very broken.
That was the number one thing I was excited to play Dungeon Dice Monsters with people, and they broke it.
So at 40% off, I don't know exactly what that costs. I guess that's like, because it's normally $40 or $50. I don't know how much it costs normally, but if you want it, that's a deal. Anyway, okay. This is not really even news, but they've been making these little promotional videos for Yu-Gi-Oh! Neuron.
About time.
Yeah, there's a few different ones, and they just kind of talk about how you can check the rankings for popular decks, use it as a life point calculator, find OTS stores near you. Thoughts?
I think it's long overdue that they actually like push the fact that Neuron exists, because I'm honestly getting sick of us uploading dual videos and
people ask us, like, what we're
using. What app is that? And I'm like, come on, Konami. Why don't people know Neuron exists yet?
I mean, it's interesting because I know, like, growing up, everybody, we all kind of wanted like an official Yu-Gi-Oh! Calculator app. Like, it's funny, Neuron came out in like 2020, maybe, something like that.
It's been around for a little while,
but like I remember for the longest time, you just had to find like unofficial Yu-Gi-Oh! Calculators and use those for life.
Or you go back to middle school and you flex with the graphing calculator. That was the move. That's how you were a real Yu-Gi-Oh! Player.
Actually, the graphing calculator is like kind of one of those mainstays of competitive. Like, I'm better than you. I've got my TI-94 or whatever, like, right, graphing calculator, and my spell
99% of the like power of this calculator will go unused.
Yeah, I'm literally only using it to track life points, but man, do I look cool doing it. However, speaking of Yu-Gi-Oh! Neuron, there are the Neuron Engage tournaments that have been taking place, I guess, starting on October 18th, but all the way through November 23rd. So if you have an OTS store, apparently you can compete in this tournament where you're supposed to use Neuron and link your card game ID and sign up. And if you play / win, don't ask me which, it's not very clear, you can get this Zeus Field Center, like Divine Arsenal AA Zeus, and these Typhon sleeves. And I'm guessing that the sleeves are actually probably like only for first place.
That would make sense. Field Center is more of a participation thing, that, and then sleeves being a prize. Sounds about right.
Yeah, have you seen them? I think they look, I would say, pretty cool. Typhon sleeves.
They look solid. I mean, it's the card artwork, so they can't really go wrong. The cards look cool. You put them on an accessory. The accessory looks cool.
Yeah, and then another OTS thing, I feel like I'm just doing Konami's job for them at this point, is Duelists in the United States, support your community this holiday season. Starting next week, donate 5 non-perishable food items at a participating OTS to join the Yu-Gi-Oh! Holiday Charity event. Now, this is something that they've actually done for many years, and I think it's one of the better, like, initiatives. I don't know what you, like, get for it, which I know, like, you're supposed
Goodwill.
To be, like, you know, yeah, I know you're supposed to be, like, obviously donating out of the good of your heart.
So Santa will visit you and be happy for you. Not Santa Claus.
But it is interesting that, like, I guess that they're not kind of tying in some little fun Yu-Gi-Oh! Tidbit to it.
Remember the Yu-Gi-Oh! Advent calendar?
I do. I liked those.
That was fire. Guys, if y'all don't remember, what year was that? Was that 2021?
And they did it in like 2 different years. I think there was like a 2021 and like a 2020.
Something like maybe. That.
Something like that.
Yeah. I remember, you know, and you guys know how advent calendars work. Every day of December, you punch it and you get a piece of candy. But this one was cool because you got a Karibo card for every day on the calendar.
Yeah, that's what it was. One year, it was like a bunch of Karibos. And then the other year,
it was like, kind it was more like just holiday generally themed.
Holiday-themed things.
Because like, I remember Santa Claus was like the last one. Like, you know, the card Santa Claus, not the person Santa Claus. And yes, I know Santa Claus is a fictional person. I just... Yeah. Look, we watched there's an anime about Santa, and I'm just a little confused. I'm not going to lie to you.
So that's like pretty much your Yu-Gi-Oh! Updates. There's been many different things. It sounds like it's a good time to get your ass to your OTS store and play some Yu-Gi-Oh! Got it?
Maybe you play Genesis. Maybe you play Time Wizard. Do people play Time Wizard?
Are we a Genesis? I mean, not Time Traveler. Now? Like, not Konami's Time Traveler, but lots of people still play Edison and Go.
Okay, I was wondering if we'd actually, like, just switched over to, like, a different alternative format being the main alternative format.
I have. Well, so speaking of Genesis, since I guess I can speak to this a little bit, I went to a regional this weekend.
Yay! Yeah, Paul won the regional.
Yeah, that's right, I won. I got first place. I did not win. I went to a regional this weekend in Indianapolis. It was really cool. I played Rescue Ace. Big mistake.
Before they got their support. Yeah.
Clearly, they did not in have fact, new support.
That was before you even knew they were getting support. Yeah, before the support
was announced. It's funny, I talked to people at that event about, like, yeah, they should be getting cards in Burst Protocol. And they did a couple days later. But, yeah, I went to a regional. I did not do very well in the main event. I'd gotten an invite a couple months ago. So I was like, oh, I'll play something for fun. And I was able to surprise some people with Rescue Ace. Like, you know, they didn't really know what the cards did, or they maybe vaguely remembered, you know, from that month-long period when it was meta. But anyway, they were doing Genesis side events at the regional, and that was pretty cool. And
you know a lot of people were playing. Point caps were?
It was just standard 100.
Okay.
Yeah, standard 100-point Genesis. I talked to some players about Genesis format, you know, just sort of like I wanted to hear people's thoughts and all of that.
Were they popular?
Yeah, people signed up for the side events. I don't remember how many flights they were able to get done or how large the flights were. They might have been like 16 player pods, I think. And then like I think they, at least as of the time when I was entering a Winamat, they were popping the 4th or 5th Genesis flight of the day. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, like the flights kind of start after people start dropping out of the regional. So it was cool. People seemed to like it. There was interest in it. You did have to submit your deck list. Normally with those like side events, you don't always have to submit your deck list because it's like, it's just a side event.
Yeah,
like
but in this case.
But they informed me that Konami actually wanted them to be gathering deck lists.
Oh, so. They want the data.
Yeah, because they want the data, and so
So they had to write in their Genesis deck list.
Well, I don't know how you submitted it. I don't know if you were, because I didn't enter one because I didn't have a Genesis deck on me. But like, I think wrote it like out on paper. But maybe you could use your own.
Terrible for whatever poor Konami employee or whoever actually has to then digitize that information, because that just means going card by card over hundreds of lists. Oh, Jesus.
One other nice little experience I had was that I played against a lot of pure Mitsurugi decks. I see why people hate Mitsurugi now.
I thought you said you were happy or you liked this experience.
But, well, it's the happy story. I played against a guy in like my Winamat, and we had our game one went all the way to time.
I thought you said this was a good experience.
It was. We were grinding. We were Yu-Gi-Oh-ing. We were playing. We had a fun time. We drew a little bit of a crowd. I think he didn't expect a Rescue Ace deck to, you know, play for that long and be able to, like, grind. Because, like, there was no stalling involved or any slow playing. We were just going back and forth, and those decks just recur resources. I mean, obviously, like, Mitsurugi's kind of a better deck because it's newer and stuff. But, like, I was holding my own, and then time got called. So, yeah. But it was fun. We only got through the one game, but it was a very fulfilling game. And
well, actually, did you get through the game?
Yeah, I guess we didn't. We didn't even actually. By the time we were done, like, the board state was still very, like, ambiguous as to who was in the lead. Like, because it was crazy. Like, I think, I'm trying to remember. I know Murakumo was obviously involved, but also, like, he had a... Oh, you know what? Yeah, I guess it was like sort of a Rizeal Mitsurugi thing, but the Rizeal part was very small. He had like a completely used up Rizeal Detonator that had been on the field for several turns. He had a Galaxy Eyes Photon Lord that had no materials because it had tried to use its effect and got negated, and SP Little Knight had like banished it and it came back with no materials. So that was like sitting there. I had a Turbulence. I had a Little Knight. I had HQ and a bunch of back row up, and like cards. It was crazy. It was fun, but it was crazy. So... yeah, that was my weekend. It was a fun Yu-Gi-Oh! Experience. Let's talk about the next card game thing, though, which is this announcement of a new Magic 2027, Magic the Gathering, Limited Championship.
Oh, yeah, I did see some discourse about this.
I don't know what Limited is. Can you tell me? Do you know what that is at all?
My understanding, Limited is just, well, sealed play. It's like draft play, essentially. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it'll be a draft tournament.
Okay, so here's... All right, so it's basically like kind of sealed draft.
Right? Yeah, I don't... Now, I'm not sure if it's like a full draft where they're actually passing packs around, or if they're literally just opening up a number of sealed packs and just playing with those. So I'm not 1,000,000% sure because I've never done... a limited tournament in Magic, though I would be interested in trying it.
Well, here's what they've got to say. It's time for high stakes, massive prizes, and a competition that brings Limited to the center stage. It's everything a Limited aficionado could dream of, and then some. Ooh, kinky. Today, we're announcing a special event and supporting tournament structure for 2026-2027. Start memorizing your Pack 1 pick ones. It's time for the Magic Limited Championship. Pack 1 pick ones.
That sounds like draft.
So it sounds drafty, yeah. It's a special tournament that puts the focus on Limited, supported by events across the world that will let the best Limited players qualify for this high-level extravaganza. It's going to take the championship will take place in 2027, but the qualifying events will be in 2026. It's a new and exciting initiative, but for now, we're just announcing this one event and its qualifying path. It's not a new series. So... I'm trying to, like, get more details.
I mean, just from what I'm seeing here, this sounds pretty cool, honestly. I mean, I know quite a few Magic players who, they exist just to play draft. And, like, if they can't draft, then they just don't play. And
it's going to have a $500,000 prize pool.
$500,000? Paul, I'm playing draft.
With a payout structure that is similar to the Pro Tour. It's always funny when places will kind of use that number because it can be a little bit misleading. They'll say, like, yeah, it's like a $500,000 prize pool.
Broken up.
Broken up across, yeah. You know, a few events and stuff like that.
Like, $500,000? I'm a Magic player now.
Yeah, it makes people think, like, oh, if I get first place at this 12-person locals, I'll get $500,000. Like, okay.
You know, though, technically, now, I'm not saying everyone should just go out and play in this tournament, but if you were going to make, like, $500,000, right? Mm-hmm. You have a better chance of winning it in a Magic tournament than you do from the lottery.
That's true. Actually, now that you mention it.
Like, yes, it takes skill, but even then, still, you probably still have a higher chance of getting lucky and high-rolling all your opponents
than
winning the lottery.
No, how would the expected value equation work out when you consider that you still have to, like, drive to the place, like, travel and hotel?
Well,
Because, you know, you can, like, kind of algorithmically...
Yeah. I mean, look, we're keeping it simple, man. $500,000 could be in your pocket just by opening up some packs and picking the right cards.
In addition to cash prizes, the top 8 players of the event will also receive invitations to the Magic World Championship in 2027. We'll have more prize details to share in the future.
If they're going to go to the World Championship, that means that there will be a limited World Championship.
Sounds like it, yeah.
Interesting. I know for a fact there are limited fiends in this world. It's so interesting that, like, such a niche, like, style of gameplay
is getting so much support. Just
vaulted all of a sudden. Like, this would be a premier, like, tournament for this upcoming year.
Yeah, they're going to be called Magic Limited Championship Qualifiers, or LTQs. They're going to be held in a variety of locations, both physical and digital. So... these events will feature different formats and invitation structures depending on their location. So, like, I guess that kind of does that. I don't know if they mean like remote, like kind of like how you get as a remote duel, or if they're going to be like using Magic
Arena. I'm assuming it's Arena. You know, they can never like let go of Arena. That's their baby.
Yeah. So, and they also say in some regions that these will replace existing open events that award regional championship invitations and prize money. Okay. So, yeah. It sounds like if you are a Magic the Gathering limited fan, this is huge news for you.
I'm just gonna go and get my little half a milli real quick, you know?
Yeah, easy peasy.
Might work. Like, you know, I'm a Yu-Gi-Oh player. I could definitely crush in Magic. No, that's a joke, guys. That is a joke.
They say Yu-Gi-Oh players are amazing at every other game they touch. So
also a joke.
Yeah, I don't know how true that is. I mean, I've heard some examples of it, but
I honestly think that like sealed Magic players have been doing this thing for so long that there's probably a very large learning curve to get over.
Yeah, although I guess like if it's limited, it still probably is being played with new sets.
Yeah, they've been using new sets, but there's certain like rules and logic.
Yeah, there's probably like deck building philosophy that goes into it.
There's likely a lot. God, I miss playing draft in Yu-Gi-Oh! This now just makes me miss when we were drafting.
Well, it kind of makes me think a little bit about like how, you know, Konami announced that there's going to sort of announcement of an announcement that there's going to be like a Genesis YCS. Mm-hmm. It makes me wonder if maybe these sorts of events might encourage Konami to kind of have Genesis be a separate circuit, right? Like almost like it's probably not if separate.
Genesis will ever be its own kind of like tournament series. We will know about it in late 2027. Why? Because anything that is good or works in Yu-Gi-Oh! Will take at least 2 years before anything can actually be implemented around it.
Yeah, Konami is a slow-moving company. That's one thing you can rest assured about. But they will get to it, or try. It's just it tends to take some time. Anyway, though, yeah, that's the 2027 Magic Limited Championship. For those of you Magic the Gathering listeners, I would certainly love it if you could maybe weigh in and let us know, like, is this exciting?
Yeah, is this, gonna is, be this, doing this? Is this heat? Is it not heat?
Yeah, I don't know enough about Magic's tournament structure to weigh in much more than that, so... Are you tired of uncomfortable chairs holding you back from your best work or gaming? Then you need to check out eWin Racing. We've been using their chairs here on the podcast, and we can personally attest to their amazing quality and comfort. We're currently rocking the brand new eWin Revolutionary Upgrade Flash Series XL chairs in these sick red and blue colors. With an ergonomic design and a built-in four-way lumbar support, these chairs will keep you comfortable and supported for hours. Plus, they're built to last with a 500-pound capacity, so you know they can handle anything you throw at them. For a limited time, you can get 30% off everything on their website. Just use our exclusive code APS at checkout. That's 30% off, even better than their Black Friday sale. So head over to eWinRacing.com and upgrade your setup today with the Flash XL or any other chairs. You won't regret it. Thanks again to eWin for sponsoring this section of the podcast. Did you hear about the AWS outage or the Amazon Web Services outage?
Yeah, I heard about it. Then I thought it was going to make a major impact on my life that day. And then it didn't.
Yeah, so the AWS outage is basically like Amazon Web Services powers a lot of sites on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Reddit and like just many different apps and things like that. And so a couple of days ago, I guess when you were listening to this, an outage happened and it took out the hundreds of services that rely on its cloud computing background. And suddenly the digital world felt like it was made of jelly. Here is this article I found that's the 9 weirdest things that happened because of that outage.
This is a hilarious article.
Yeah, it's actually pretty crazy. So we're going to go through them. Number 1, smart bed owners were left hot and bothered. So yeah, this one's fun because the outage gave many cloud engineers and IT departments a sleepless night, but that was also the case for some owners of 8 Sleep's smart beds. This is a brand of smart bed that I've actually heard of. Maybe you've heard of it. Yeah, I guess it's a smart bed, which means to say that it can like track your biometrics data and control the temperature, and it's like connected to the cloud so that it's like,
what does it do? Give you advice on how to like sleep better?
I think it does actually.
What if you sleep with a partner? Is it also like tracking your partner's data?
I think so. I think that they have
Three inappropriate jokes popped into my head, but I'll keep them to myself.
Well, I mean, apparently they even, it's like one of those things where like it can have like your side of the bed, like Alec likes his side of the bed like cooler at night, but like she likes her side of the bed like warm, you know, things like that. So anyway, yeah, when the AWS outage happened, people's beds got stuck in different positions. Like somebody said that their bed was stuck in an inclined position due to the outage.
So wait, when they lose their connection, they don't just go back to whatever their default shape is? They just hold?
It seems like they're stuck. And then also, it apparently, like, someone said, like, the back-end outage means I'm sleeping in a sauna. So I guess, like, it would maybe keep the warming settings stuck on or something like that.
Ooh, I can't stand the idea of sweating while I sleep.
So 8 Sleep CEO Matteo, I'm not going to say his last name.
No. Do it.
Francescetti. Said on X that changes have been made to avoid outages caused by these disruptions, with the company currently outage-proofing your pod experience. So I guess what they're going to do is, like, if this happens in the future, there will be protocols in your smart bed to just kind of, what you were saying, I guess, default to kind of normal.
Is that going
to
remove something, the sweat stains of that guy whose bed wouldn't stop warming? Like,
I don't know. That's a good question. So number 2, Slack users were trapped in never-ending huddles.
All right, you're going to have to educate me because I actually have never used Slack and I don't know what a huddle means.
Yeah, so Slack is, actually, I remember once upon a time we were going to try to use Slack for like YouTube management stuff. Never ended up doing it, but it's one of those.
We downloaded it and I didn't use it.
Yeah, it's one of those just workspace, kind of Google Workspace, Microsoft Teams, that sort of thing, where, you know, you can do like meetings and notes and share resources and stuff at your job. Well, anyway, Slack has these things called huddles, which is such a like LinkedIn coded term for like, I guess, little business meetings, like little video calls. And as spotted by The Verge, a Slack status update during the blackout said that we're currently investigating an issue where some users remain stuck in a, oh my God, I actually moved my tab, remain stuck in a huddle after attempting to leave.
Just walk out the room. I don't know what.
Well, yeah, but you still want to use your computer.
Wait.
Yeah. So imagine you're in a video call.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, bye guys. Like, we're done talking about this meeting, and it won't let you leave it.
Well, no, you can still leave. You can just walk out the room. You know.
Yeah, but you still want to like play a game on your computer, browse the web, and like it won't let you leave the huddle call.
Oh.
And it's still listening.
Oh, I see. These aren't Southern Black families.
Okay.
And you know, and you might know exactly where I'm headed with this.
What do you mean?
See, in just about every like Southern Black family household, when it comes to webcams, we always have something that's ready to flip down and block
the webcam. Oh yeah, people have like the tape.
The tape, the sticky notes.
No, I guess this also was affecting people at work. So like literally like your work computer, it's, you know, where maybe it's, you don't have the option, I guess.
I got one for my work computer too.
Yeah, so
y'all ain't gonna be looking at me.
Being stuck in a huddle usually wouldn't be considered an unpleasant experience, but it's slightly more serious in the context of Slack, given that it means being trapped in an audio call with a work colleague that you can't leave. So
you can mute yourself.
Can you? I don't know. I don't use Slack.
I mean, I guess, yeah, sure. I don't. Maybe you can't mute yourself.
That might have been part of the issue,
which would be a huge problem. Because remember those situations of people having inappropriate videos playing during their work meetings.
Yeah, Italian Tifa or whatever.
Italian Tifa, and then there's that one senator. Like, ugh.
Also, the Premier League lost its virtual referees. So the Premier League soccer, looks like a soccer league, was not safe from the AWS outage. There was no old school floodlight failure or ticket fiasco, but the problems did take out the semi-automated offside technology during Monday night's match between West Ham and Brentford. I don't watch soccer, so I don't know these teams.
Couldn't tell you either.
But basically, I guess they have these digital kind of things that track, like kind of these virtual referees that probably track like if a ball is out or like, you know, where a player was. And so, yeah, that they weren't able to do that during the game.
God forbid the refs have to do their jobs.
Amazon.com turned into a gallery of dogs.
Huh?
So basically, Amazon's homepage was, people couldn't check their order histories, and they got an error screen that had a dog on it.
Why a dog?
I guess it's just like a cute little thing to let you know, like, sorry, something went wrong on our end.
So you put a dog on your screen?
Mm-hmm. You see the screenshot?
Yeah, I'm looking at it. I'm just trying to figure out why. Wait, is it a link? What is that? It says, Hunter, meet the dogs of Amazon. Oh, so they just do that.
Yeah, that's...
I wonder if everyone gets a different dog.
Number five, Starbucks fans were burnt by the experience. Mm-hmm. So I guess what this means is the Starbucks app was down. That's all.
Oh, I thought someone like got burnt. Like
I thought that's what that meant too. Yeah, I thought it meant like, you know, somebody like it, the computer that like AI controls the temperature of like what it serves, it was broken. And so it gave you like 1,000,000 degree coffee and it killed you.
The web services went down and the espresso machine just started shooting. Just,
oh my God, that'd be terrifying. Wordle and Duolingo fans threatened to riot. So, you know how in games like Wordle and Duolingo, you have streaks?
Yeah, they want you to play every day.
Well, these were down, and so people seemingly lost their daily streaks.
And I know those streaks are a very core part of the game, and people take a lot of pride in having very long streaks. But I am seeing a tweet where it says, your streaks will be saved. Thank you for your patience.
Yeah. Fortunately, Wordle has now seemingly restored the streaks lost to the outage, which was probably wise given Halloween would struggle to match a sight as terrifying as a horde of furious Wordle fans brandishing pitchforks.
I thought they already were doing that.
Airline passengers lost check-in info and seat reservations, so this seems actually pretty horrible.
Like, that... Airports are stressful enough. Flying is stressful enough. Nobody needs this.
Yeah, some Delta and United passengers saw reservations and seat assignments go missing and found that they couldn't check into flights. Oh my gosh. So they say, fortunately, big delays were avoided, but it left many scratching their heads about why such critical systems are still so fragile and over-dependent on a handful of tech companies.
That's because there's only a handful of billionaires.
Number eight, even school exams were delayed. I'd have been happy if I was in college.
I mean, I think everybody's cool with that one. It's like, well.
Yeah, apparently a lot of U.S. students and teachers use Canvas, which is an online teaching aid that hosts lessons, assignments, and course information. And Canvas was hit by the outage, going down for over 12 hours. Some students saw this as a godsend, writing on Reddit that, quote, my midterms are inaccessible, and they were having a great day.
Just know those midterms are still there, and you will have to take them.
But hey, it could be an extra day to study.
They're not going to do that.
They won't. The last ChatGPT. And number nine, bank transfers disappeared into the ether.
Oh, hell no.
Now that seems kind of...
Boy, if my money disappeared.
Yeah, they said on Venmo, many people had trouble sending and receiving payments. Banks in the UK, like Lloyds and Bank of Scotland, were also taken out. The BBC reported a case of a person who was missing 50 euros after transferring money to her partner. That'd be scary. Like, what if the bank, like, I mean, I'm assuming that, you know, the transfers eventually went through, but like, yeah, they say that it was a frustrating experience that on average cost businesses around $75 million an hour, according to research by Tenscope. So
losing money. Now that, see, all most of this to me was like, haha, jokey jokey. But like the idea that you could just be out some dollars.
I know.
Maybe some tens of dollars, maybe some hundreds of dollars.
I mean, it's one thing if, like, you know, you're sending somebody like, oh, I need to send you like $20 to pay for a thing. But I mean, imagine if like it's like a major transaction, like you're changing like a lot of money from like your savings to your checking account or something.
Moving $5,000. God, I wish I had $5,000 to move. But you're moving $5,000, just disappears. I'm speaking into existence now.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. Obviously, that outage has since been resolved, so no problem. But if you are listening, I'd love to hear how the outage affected you, if it affected any of your, like, life, work. day-to-day dealings.
I really thought that a lot of things in my life use Amazon Web Services, and then they didn't.
Yeah, I didn't. I will say, I it didn't affect me much. Like, I know they said that Reddit was down, although I didn't have any. I might have just gotten lucky when I used Reddit, I guess. Like, it just wasn't down when I was using it, but I guess, like, for me, it's if YouTube is down, that's, like, a huge deal, or, like, maybe social media, because, like, you know. But, yeah, I don't use, I guess, enough stuff, and I don't actually shop on Amazon all that much, so. Obviously, Amazon itself being down doesn't affect me. So.
Gotta check on my mom. She loves Amazon.
Well, I mean, you say check on her as if, like, the site being down could physically, like, hurt her.
That could. I mean, you know, when you're an Amazon shopper, it's a lifestyle.
Okay. So the rest of this pod is pretty much going to be a lot of gaming news.
Yay.
Which is why I think that I will start by actually covering our AI story now.
Oh, okay.
This one's a fun one. It's ChatGPT. You can guess.
Who's surprised?
All right, Alex. So have you ever wanted to explore a little bit of erotica on ChatGPT?
No.
Well, since you said that you're so excited about it.
I knew you were going to ignore my answer and not care.
OpenAI plans to allow a wider range of content, including erotica, on its popular chatbot as part of its push to, quote, treat adult users like adults, says its boss, Sam Altman.
This just screams to me that ChatGPT is not at all doing what they needed to do and they're desperate for money.
They need some money. In an X post on Tuesday, Mr. Altman, this is from last week, but said upcoming versions of the popular chatbot would enable it to behave in a more human-like way, quote, but only if you want it, not because we are usage maxing. That's such
wedding?
I guess he's suggesting that they're not making it behave human-like just to get more people to use it. They're going to give you the choice about, like, if you want it to behave like a human. But more importantly, he said that a while back, you know, Mr. Altman said that they're going to make ChatGPT pretty restricted to make sure that we're being careful with mental health issues. But we realized that this made it less useful slash enjoyable to many users who had no mental health problems. But given the seriousness of the issue, we wanted to get this right. So now, in December, as we roll out age gating more fully, and as part of our treat adult users like adults principle, we will allow even more, like, erotica for verified adults.
I thought they said they were trying to protect people with mental health disorders.
So, they did say that.
And then here we are. Now we'll give them erotica. Look, I'm not trying to be a hater, but if you're looking for your erotica from AI, you probably have a mental health disorder.
I hate that I can't disagree with that. I mean, okay, I'll put it this way. I think that when he says mental issues, he seems to be specifically referring to suicidal tendencies because they've come under so much fire for, like, these, you know, ChatGPT telling somebody to kill themselves. But I guess he doesn't have a problem with how many people use it for, like, therapy. Because that seems like that's still, like, something that it
I do not think you
do.
Should be able to go to the same platform for therapy and erotica. Something is not right.
Yeah. So I wonder, like, I just have so many concerns. Like,
I can think about are people having it act out like therapist porn scenarios.
I wonder, like, what, and actually, I guess I don't want it. Don't answer this. I wonder what, like, erotica with ChatGPT specifically looks like.
It'll also use images.
That I don't want that. But, like, I just, so, because my question is, like, is it kind of like self, like, self insert? Like, is it, you know, you are, okay, I saw a video. You know that thing?
Oh my God. No,
that's not what I meant. No, it was a video that was, like, covering that case of, like, character AI where the kid.
Oh, yes. Got,
yeah. So even in, like, character AI, they apparently the models, like, glitch a bit. Like, they'll be like, you know, it's like, you know, they're talking dirty to you and all that, but they will say aloud the action that's going on, like, rubs shoulder softly.
Right.
But it will say that. Mm-hmm. The voice will say, like, it's okay, Alec, rub shoulder softly. It will be fine. I think you're, it'll, you know. So, like, they clearly haven't been able to, like, sort out that difference.
Well, because how else can it communicate a physical action that it's doing? It can't physically do the action, so it has to tell you.
Yeah, I mean, so that's why I'm wondering, like, how much, is it more that you are, I guess, just the erotica is being, like, like make a story about it and just like the story will entertain me? Or is it like you are engaging with the chatbot? Yeah, I think
it's like it's engaging with you. It's kind of like how like cybering worked way back in the infancy of the internet, where two hopelessly like alone people pretend to have like relations through text. But in this case, it's just one you and AI.
I wonder how they're doing this age gating thing. Like, I know that, I think that they said, like, it's just going to kind of assume your age a little bit. Like, it's just based on the types of things that you ask and search for, that it'll just sort of be like, oh, you must be like 13 or whatever. So we're not going to let this thing say weird stuff. But, like, that seems so unreliable.
Well, no, I think it's pretty good. I think right now people's ability to like type and speak are at an all-time low. I highly doubt there are many kids who can actually fake their age. If it's guessing your age based off the what you search and what you type, I feel like most kids can't type like an adult because most adults can't type like an adult.
Yeah. I don't know. I
think it would be funny. You're like 35 and you want to use the erotic AI features. But it's like it gates you. It's like you are 12.
You type like you're 12.
It's like you are a 12-year-old.
I mean, so when you use it for your erotica that you're so excited about.
Absolutely,
Alec,
not.
You know. I don't like the sound of this, but I also know that the genie's out of the bottle with a lot of people. Like, people were angry when ChatGPT-5, we talked about it, like when ChatGPT-5 happened, people were like mad that it was...
It's not as personable.
It's too impersonal. And I said then, I still say now, like, I prefer that it would be like, just give me information. Don't try to like get to know me or like talk to me or whatever.
Make it sound like a soulless robot, please. Thank you.
But yeah, I guess they're trying to reverse course. How is like OpenAI like, what's the business model? I'm still kind of confused on like, what is actually OpenAI and like ChatGPT, like how do they like really, what do they offer people? Like, I know that they've got like their whole like GPT Pro little subscription service, but like they're saying that this company burns money all the time and like it's not at all profitable. It gets a lot of venture capital funding and stuff and investments, but like it does not have a profitable business model right now. And I guess my question is like, what is it just kind of like just, we're just going to try to like stick our fingers in everything and just hope that something kind of works out. Cause like, even if it's giving me erotica and I'm like enjoying it, that's not like really I don't know.
So I have a theory.
Okay.
You want to hear it?
Yeah.
So I think of ChatGPT as kind of this like weird loss leader in Sam Altman's AI goals.
Okay.
ChatGPT does not exist to sell AI. It actually exists to make AI seem as harmless as possible. While in truth, they're working on like AI at the enterprise level that will completely revolutionize businesses and allow them to take millions of people out of the workforce. But that's scary, and that's not objectively a good thing for the vast majority of people. So they made ChatGPT, this little AI playground, so that while they're working on all this, people are thinking, AI is so fun. AI is just, it helps me. I can make pictures and I can have sex with AI ladies. Like,
so it's meant to make AI seem approachable
and friendly and safe. When ultimately,
and it softens your opinion.
Sam Altman, Elon Musk, all those billionaire types, they are creating software to put as many of us out of jobs as humanly possible.
Yeah. What was the one that we covered? It was like human AI, where they had the billboards that were like, don't hire humans, like stop hiring humans.
Yeah, I remember
that one. I don't know if that's what that was called, but.
But that's, ChatGPT exists so that we don't look at those billboards and realize, you know, that is very much what's happening.
Yeah. Well, there's a cool new product that you might be interested in. This is not AI. I'm sure it's not AI.
Thank God. Because, Paul, I'm not going to lie, I was going to smack you with my bad arm.
The Samsung Galaxy XR was just recently revealed and actually released.
Oh, they revealed and released it almost immediately?
Yeah, this is all yesterday night as of us recording this. You guys know it's Thursday when you're hearing this.
But it's Wednesday for us.
Wednesday for us. We didn't say that at the start. People look forward to that.
We didn't. I'm sorry, guys.
Yeah, they look forward to that. We're letting them down. So, yeah, Samsung revealed the Galaxy XR, which is their new VR, or I guess you could maybe call it a mixed reality headset. It's sort of like this article in The Verge describes it as a cheaper Apple Vision Pro. But cheaper kind of in a good way. It's $1,799, as in $1,799.
Absolutely not.
It's just funny because, like, that's half the price of Apple's Apple Vision Pro. The Apple Vision Pro is like $3,500. But anyways, yeah, it's a new VR headset. It's $1,800, and it's just got a lot of cool features. It, like, you know, has motion, like, gesture-based controls because, like, it's got a bunch of cameras, and so, like, you're, like, selecting stuff and moving things around with, like, your hand and, like, pinch, you know, whatever. Same with typing. So that kind of seems neat. It runs on Android XR, which is the Android VR sort of offshoot of the Android operating system. And if you buy it, you even get, like, a bundle of subscriptions, just a bunch of different stuff. So
see, I don't like that. You get a bundle of subscriptions, so I get a bunch of free trials that I have to pay for in a couple months. How about you just get, if I'm paying $1,700 for the headset, I want all that shit permanently, forever.
Now, there is one thing in here that actually surprised me. So they've got some really cool stuff. Like, this is one thing I like about, like, Android XR. I'm just going to get a little nerdy.
Is here we go, guys.
Because it's Android, well, you'll appreciate this. It is compatible with all Android apps and games. So, like, I know you play a lot of mobile games.
I can play Nikkei?
Yeah, all of your mobile games just work on the headset seamlessly. Like, you know, when using an Apple Vision Pro or also, like, the Meta Quests, like, you wouldn't be able to play, like, Nikkei or other mobile games
Who
on that.
Says I can't?
Yeah, you'd have to jump through hoops.
I've already figured that out.
Yeah, but here it's just like, oh, you can just literally download anything off the Play Store and play it. So that's pretty cool, and you can, like, set up windows and kind of have them all, like, moving around. But one cool thing that you can use is NBA League Pass will actually allow you to watch things like sports in VR, like live sports, like NBA games as they're happening, and that's one of the things that it includes.
I'm pretty sure I did that in my Quest.
Maybe you did.
I did, because there was a an NBA thing that I watched once. It was buggy and glitchy, but that was a while ago, so maybe it's better now.
I think it would be cool to be able to, like, kind of watch an NBA game, like, courtside from your VR headset, if you kind of imagine, like, being able to see it from that point of view and, like, look around.
All the benefits of courtside without the, like, human sweat and, like, danger of someone running into you at all times.
I wonder what would happen if, like, a player, like, knocked into the VR, like, the cam, because, you know, they'd have like a camera, and it'd probably be like streaming.
I mean,
that
it probably can and will happen eventually. I mean, we've seen players just run straight into the fans who are on sitting courtside. You know, they don't want to, but when you're running full speed and these are people at the very height of human athletic ability, things happen.
What do you think of the look of it?
I think it looks almost, not exactly, but, like, terrifyingly similar to the Apple Vision Pro. And I say that to mean it looks creepy.
Oh, you think it looks creepy?
Yeah, that big old, like, spaceman, like, visor type situation, I find it unsettling.
Yeah, I think for me, with these VR headsets, a lot of what kind of comes to mind is, like, I think there's a bit of, like, a social stigma around, like, I think that these companies would like for you to, you know, the VR headset to be the future of computing. Like, this is how you do all your work and your games and your communication with friends in the world of VR.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be their ideal. The thing is, though, outside of just being way too expensive, and I'm probably uncomfortable because, like, I mean, how are you going to wear this thing for more than, like, an hour? But also, like, you wouldn't wear this outside, right? I mean, I wouldn't think.
I've tried. I can't bring myself to do it. Because, guys, I've had many headsets now. I think I'm on my third one currently. And the one thing I've never been able to do is take my headset out in public and just use it. It's not that it's impossible. They're all pretty much pretty wireless now, where you can take them out and about with you. But to, like, go out in public and put your VR headset on,
it feels
kind of like
weird.
Be miming around while everyone else is existing in the real world.
And they're looking at you just like, what the hell is he doing? Like,
because I don't think I can get so engrossed in whatever the VR experience I'm enjoying is to like not feel the embarrassment of it.
Yeah, I think I would be too aware of that. I also would kind of be afraid like someone might just mug me. Like, because I mean, and not just like take the headset from me. Like, what if like just because you're so disconnected, I feel like what if like, you know, a pickpocket just kind of, because you're just so into whatever you're like playing or looking at that someone just like slipped your wallet out of like your back pocket or something. Like, it just, I feel like you'd be too vulnerable to like things like that. So
yeah, I can't get behind it. Like there is one way this works.
Okay.
Everyone else has to be doing it too.
Yeah. I mean, I guess in the hyper dystopian Black Mirror episode of the world where like we're all just walking around with like these just giant headsets on, like, I guess then you're just one of the people, but then that's a whole other concern. It's like, are we even like, why are we even outside at that point?
Are we like, are we like outside, together? Yeah. Are we in the same place?
So even though it has hand gestures, it actually does have handheld controllers. What do you think of these?
They look exactly how I'd expect them to look. I mean, the VR like controller type has pretty much been solved. They all now just look very similar. I think what's more important than the actual controllers themselves are the like the hand gesture controls. Even though you will look stupider than ever doing it, like, hand gesture controls in VR, that does feel nice. Yeah. It feels cool.
I wonder how accurate they are. Like, I mean, from what I've heard, it sounds pretty good.
With my Quest 3, pretty damn good, I'm not gonna lie.
I'm gonna say this, and I never thought I'd be saying it, but like, I think Meta kind of figured a lot of this stuff out before Samsung and Apple did, because the Meta Quest is like $500 or less, $400 yeah, or something like that. And while that's not, you know, so cheap that little Jimmy can have one, it's still like
way better than compared $1,700.
To like $1,800 or $3,500 for an Apple Vision Pro. It's like, you know, absolutely, the Meta Quest maybe has like slightly cheaper materials or maybe like slightly lower resolution or whatever and the computing power, but like, I mean, it doesn't, none of that matters when it's like when you're comparing like $400 to like $1,800.
Because the thing is, it's not like, oh, it's not as good as like the Apple Vision Pro. Yeah, but I don't have $3,500 to drop. That is not money I'm rocking with.
And I mean, like, who does? Like who casually has the money, like, of normal people? So,
like, even a $1,700 headset, I don't just have that. That's not gaming headset money. The most expensive gaming thing I've ever purchased was my PC, and I bought it in parts. I think it ran me like $1,100 in total. But you, I broke that up over time. About
is like, if you had $1,800, it would just, you'd almost certainly be better served by buying a PC.
Yeah, an $1,800 PC? Ooh, you, yeah, gaming.
Maybe in today's economy, you might need a little more than that. But I know like PC parts are high and NVIDIA stuff is high.
You're gaming if you're on
the, but yeah, but $1,800 will get you far better for your personal PC than buying this one headset. Another thing too, though, a product that I was kind of passively interested in for a while was like those Meta Ray-Bans. Have you seen those?
I've seen them, and I've always...
They just thought updated about them. It,
but I can't pull the trigger.
They just updated them.
The Ray-Ban name just throws me off.
Well, so I mean, I don't know that much about Ray-Bans. I've never been like a sunglasses guy, but I have seen how like how much they've managed to pack into these now quite normal looking sunglasses. It's, you're not getting like a VR experience or anything. It's just kind of more of like, I think like
it's an augmented reality experience.
Not even really that. It's like a screen kind of on the side, like on one side, yeah, of your life, which I guess is augmented reality.
Augmented your reality.
But I guess it's not like imposing things in like 3D space.
Yeah, we're not talking like Yu-Gi-Oh! Zexal style augmented reality.
But yeah, and so you're able to actually use that and like, and so it has like a camera and that's like, it's like $300. It kind of seems neat. Like, I thought about getting one for when we go to conventions. I could just sort of like record stuff, and like, since it's from Meta, you can like instantly share things to your Instagram story. So I was like, oh, okay, like if we're at like New York Comic Con or whatever, and I'm just seeing these cool things in a booth, and I want to be able to quickly share it, that kind of seems like a pretty seamless thing to do. The video quality is decent, and like, it doesn't have games or anything.
So I don't think that's as great as it sounds, because now your head is the camera, your neck is the tripod. Like, yeah, that doesn't sound very comfortable to me.
Well, I know that, like...
And can you look normal if you're, like, trying to record something?
Well, I guess the expectation would be that, like, if I'm at a convention, everybody will just kind of be like, oh, everyone's got cameras here, so how much weirder would I look? But in public, there's still, even with that, issues about, like, recording. Like, you know, say we're both sitting in the subway, and now, like, I can record you by just kind of looking at you. And if you're the average person, you don't know what to look for in these Meta Ray-Bans. They have a little green, or not a green, like a little circle that lights up around just the camera that kind of lets people in public know that you're recording. But is that enough? Like, in a crowded space, in a, like a grocery store, like in a subway, some people would know, some wouldn't.
It's weird. Like, I know that you're not, you know, you're not supposed to record people without their permission. But in this day and age, it seems like that happens anyway, like, and often at that. So I kind of don't worry so much about people walking around with their little smart glasses and recording everything, because unless like they're getting glimpses of like my debit card information or like some other like information I just don't want out there, I guess I can't stop people from recording me. People have their phones out all the time. They're recording this. Sometimes it's recording themselves and they're recording you. And it's...
Yeah, so I would like to see how this Samsung Galaxy XR, you know, goes. I mentioned watching people's reviews of it. I know that you're pretty, you know, kind of big into the VR. Just following.
Not
VR
big products. Enough to spend $1,700.
Yeah, maybe they could get this sort of thing down in price. But speaking of recording people, however.
Who are we recording?
What the heck? When I closed it, it just like disappeared from... Anyway.
Oh, I accidentally deleted it, but I brought it back.
Okay. Twitch faces backlash after popular streamer Emiru, I hope I said that right, says she was assaulted at TwitchCon. So TwitchCon happened this past weekend, you may have seen.
And TwitchCon always comes with controversy.
Twitch controversy. So, yeah, TwitchCon happened. It's the yearly, or well, I guess they have a few in different locations, but it is the yearly convention for people who either are Twitch streamers or fans of Twitch streamers. And I saw that the streamer Emiru, she's a popular cosplayer and streamer, she got assaulted, actually, and she says that the event security staff did not protect her, and multiple women streamers had expressed fears about their safety at TwitchCon. So I saw a little clip of this. But on Friday, the first of the three-day convention in San Diego, videos circulated online of a man walking up to the streamer Emiru at a meet-and-greet and appearing to grab her for a kiss as she tried to push him away. Her security guard quickly intervenes and drives the man away.
Jesus. Yeah, I'm watching the clip now. Like, what unhinged nonsense is at play here?
Yeah. So tell me, what when you see that clip, I mean, like, what's going on?
So, okay. It's exactly as the article sounds. Meet and greet. She's actually there with a fan already. This guy casually just kind of walks in off screen. He wasn't coming out of line. He just kind of comes out of hammer space. And just without missing a beat, walks up to her, grabs her, immediately starts going for the kiss. And then in about 2 seconds, her security guard runs in and shoves him away from her. But you know what the first thing I noticed was?
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's not very big, and this guy was a lot bigger than her. That...
Yeah, that's scary.
That should not be able to happen. That...
Yeah, that's scary. So many thoughts come to mind for me with this. First, you know, first and foremost, that is effectively, I think, what most would justifiably call sexual assault.
That, oh, most definitely. Yeah. Well, actually, because he was able to put his hands on her, that's battery.
Yeah.
So it's worse.
Yeah. It's, so there's that. That's wrong. But then also, you know, I worry about the security. Like, I don't know if that was, like, her personal security. I don't know if that was, like, Twitch security, like, the security at, like, TwitchCon or however that was going. But, like...
From what I'm seeing in the article, that is her security. Twitch security, I don't think, got involved until later.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, I don't... Obviously, I don't know exactly what it means to, like, work a security detail for a streamer in today's modern society. Like, I'm sure it's crowded event, it's loud, it's crazy. There's a lot to be looking out for. But that guy was able to get way too close way too easily for my liking. I mean, like, it happened so quickly, and it's kind of interesting because, like, the security people seem close to her, like, relatively close to her. So I guess how did they not spot, like, just the guy, like, kind of coming up? And,
I mean, the guy wasn't, he didn't, like, take his time with it. He walked with purpose. He walked like he was on a mission. I don't think anyone immediately knew he wasn't supposed to be there. Yeah, they
didn't register it.
Because we've all been, we haven't all been to conventions, but you and I, we've been to quite a few conventions. Oftentimes, there isn't really like a uniform for everyone that actually like is working the event or the staff at the event. There's usually different uniforms, and some people are in plain clothes. So it wouldn't have been weird for some like organizer or staff member in plain clothes to walk up to her to tell her something. But and so they probably didn't move at that point. But once he grabbed her, it's like, whoa, wait a minute. That's not normal. But it shouldn't be able to happen.
Like, it's interesting because it was a meet and greet. So yeah. I always thought with meet and greets, and I know like different places handle them differently. Like it's kind of a like one at a time, like, it would be physically impossible for someone to do that because outside of security, there would be like, you know, some sort of a railing or just some tape, like something where literally one person gets to meet her at a time and then they're like ushered out and the next person comes in such that like, I mean, I know it can oftentimes be a lot more like rough and tumble than that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember at like New York Comic Con, I was doing a like, the comic signings and stuff that they were doing, like, I was doing one that was, like, in the middle of the show floor. So, like, people were just walking around. Like, there wasn't really, like, security or anything. So, I mean, I guess it can be any number of ways.
I haven't done too many meet and greets in my life. I did meet Rikishi, the ex-wrestler. And for that meet and greet, it was just a line in front of his booth. And anybody could have walked up to him, cut me in line or whatever. To be fair, that's a big man and you're probably not playing that game with him, but
yeah.
But yeah, I think in conventions, they're usually very informal events. And because it's supposed to be like fans and these like streamers, I don't think security takes it all that seriously. Like, it's not like they were protecting like Kim Kardashian.
Yeah. Like,
for instance, and this is an anecdote. Back home in New Orleans, we have a festival called Essence Fest, and it brings out a lot of celebrities, and they oftentimes have their security. I remember some reality star woman, she was cutting through the show floor, which is filled with people, with her security in tow, and they wouldn't let anybody get close to her, even if you were just so happened to be standing in front of her looking at something completely different. You would take a forearm to the back as her security is moving you out of the way. Don't you dare get near her. But yeah, but at these like at TwitchCon, it's not that serious, right? They're not real celebrities. They're like, but they are.
To many fans online, her assault validated long-running fears about streamer safety at in-person events, particularly scheduled meet and greets where fans know exactly where a particular creator will be ahead of time. Some streamers online claimed that they canceled their meet and greets or skipped this year's TwitchCon altogether because of existing concerns about security, while others said they plan to shun future TwitchCons in solidarity with Emiru. She also blasted Twitch for the way that event organizers handled the situation, writing in a statement on X that the man was, quote, was allowed to cross multiple barriers at TwitchCon and even in front of another creator's meet and greet to grab me and my face and try to kiss me.
That is what it looked like in the video. It did look like he was just crossing across things.
Only her personal security guard stepped in, she wrote, while multiple TwitchCon security staff members did not react and let the guy walk away. So I don't know if by walk away they mean, I guess, like, walk just towards her. Like,
I don't think the guy was, when I was looking at the article, I don't think that guy was arrested immediately. Maybe he got arrested
later. Oh, yeah. Okay, so here's what she says. Sorry. He was allowed to walk away from my meet and greet, and I didn't hear he was caught until hours after he attacked me, she wrote. And it felt like this only happened because of my manager pressing for it, not because TwitchCon staff present thought it was a big deal.
And so that's pretty problematic. I think once the sexual assault or battery, whatever you want to call it, has happened, nobody should just be sitting around. I don't know if they think that's normal when...
This is the weird part, too. She added in a video that her manager contacted police shortly after the incident and she plans to press charges at the bare minimum. She also said Twitch had planned to suspend the man from the platform for 30 days before deciding on an indefinite ban after she pushed back. I'm sorry, what the fuck? They banned him from Twitch? Like, is that all they're going to do? Is that
really a punishment? You just make a new account.
Right? I was like, is that all they're doing?
People get banned on Twitch all the time.
Yeah, because it's like, I mean, I guess they know what his account is. Big deal. Make a new account or like, but also like that's okay. He assaulted her like at this event and his like online account gets banned for 30 days or whatever. Like that doesn't feel at all proportionate with, like it doesn't feel like a related thing. I mean, I guess I get it from the angle of like, you're not allowed to creep on these streamers anymore, but you can sign out of Twitch and like watch not logged in. Like that doesn't feel like an actual.
He didn't say something inappropriate in her chat. The man literally committed a crime. Like a real crime.
Yeah. And that actually brings me to my really big takeaway from this, which is that, like, it's getting so parasocial now. Like, I think, like, what we really have to blame for a lot of this, in addition to, you know, the security and everything like that, is that there is a sect of fandom around, like, streamers and influencers who are very obsessive and they're very lonely. And, like, Twitch as a platform is one where it's so much about like connecting to this person on the screen in real time. Like they're, you know, streaming, and like if I donate money, they'll see my message and read it aloud. And like, you know, I follow them on all these platforms. I'm a tier one sub or, you know, a tier three sub or whatever. And it's concerning because I think that for a lot of these people who might be there, you know, maybe lonely, maybe depressed, many number of things, they come to an event like TwitchCon where they know their favorite creator is going to be there. And like, you know, I donate money to her. I love her. She's my princess. She's my life. Like, and now I'm going to get like my chance to make myself like known to her. And
so I don't know if that's exactly what this was, because in that case, why wasn't he in line for the meet and greet?
I think that to be in line for the meet and greet is making himself like the rest of the fans.
Because like, I feel like to not buy the like, or maybe it's not, I don't know if it's a pay for meet and greet, but to not get in line, to specifically break the rules in order to make his sexual assault act, I feel like that shows that he knew what he was doing was wrong.
That's...
And it's like, I don't know if it was like a parasocial thing or if he really just...
And it could be either.
Or if he wanted to just commit a crime.
But the reason I say it is like, I think I read this as probably somebody who was a fan of hers and like likes her. She's cute and she streams. I watch her streams. And like, it's not enough to just be in line with everyone and do the meet and greet. And this person's eyes, like, they have to make like I'm going to make you mine type of thing. Like, to follow the rules of the meet and greet is just like waiting in line, and like maybe security might be closer to you as you talk to her. But like, he probably figured that if he's going to kind of like take her into his own hands, this is perhaps I hate it sounds icky saying that, but like, is he has to kind of break the rules because like, and you know, I hate to say it, but I mean, even we've experienced elements of this in the past. Nothing obviously to this degree.
Yeah, no one's ever tried to kiss me. But, no one.
but like, you know, we've had fans who are, they're so excited to see you maybe at an event or whatever that they forget that you're talking to other people. Right. And they'll kind of interrupt anyway. And maybe like, you know, or maybe not like want to leave or not like wait their turn. Or just get, or like make very, very close like physical contact. Like it's very.
Man, those like pre like COVID days going to events, that's what it was like sometimes. Just,
and I think like with modern internet culture, you know, I'm not trying to like get this into too much of the whole like male loneliness epidemic talk, but it exists, right? Like we'd be lying if we said that there aren't, especially since COVID, I think, more people who are like terminally online and they're only really finding connections or what they feel are connections with the streamer. like the Twitch streamer.
I guess that guy should have had the erotic AI from ChatGPT.
That's true. That's a great way to connect those stories. So basically, what you're really saying is Sam Altman is creating the solution here.
Well, he's creating a solution for a mentally ill person.
Yeah.
Or just a criminally inclined person. I'm kind of curious to know what actually spurred this guy to that action.
We'll probably never know.
Yeah, they probably buried him with the fishes by now.
Yeah, I mean, but in all seriousness, I hate that this happened to her. I feel like, you know, it's really kind of indescribable. Like, when your safety and personal space is violated like that, you'll never feel, like, safe again. Like, that's how it's often, you know, like real life or sexual assault, like, cases. Like, you know, people oftentimes, the victims say, like, I'm unable to feel safe again. Because right. Even if, like, you know, the guy goes to jail and charges are pressed, you can't get that sense of safety back completely in many cases. And so, whatever, not to sound like preachy, but I don't know if people don't like when it gets like
so all guys, preachy sounding, but like, it sucks. Next time you see your favorite streamer in public, don't force a kiss on them. I know that doesn't seem like it needs to be said, but at least for one person, it needed to be said, so I'm just going to put it out there.
Yeah, okay, so here's some more gaming news. Both of these pieces of news are actually about next-gen consoles. You guys might be wondering,
there are going to be next-gen consoles?
Yeah, apparently there are. There's going to be a PS6. There's going to be some next Xbox of some sort. And we got a bit of tidbits on both of them. So, Shuhei Yoshida, says Sony can't keep increasing graphics power, noting that he can't even tell the difference between some of the graphical capabilities anymore. So yeah, ex-Sony indie boss Shuhei Yoshida revealed during an appearance on the Friends Per Second podcast that he's having trouble telling the difference between various graphical capabilities nowadays as technology is inevitably starting to plateau for home consoles. While admitting that he feels PlayStation hardware won't simply be able to keep bumping up the visual quality, as Sony has been doing in past generations, he did say the PS5's SSD made almost every game a better game. So, basically, he talked about how, you know, like, these gaming companies will talk about things like ray tracing and all these other graphical capabilities, but like, unless it's side by side, and even sometimes when it is side by side, most people can't tell the difference.
Right.
I remember when they announced the PS5 Pro and they were like, here's, you know, these improvements, like here's how it looks in the Pro versus the PS5. And people are like, what? Like, I can't, what's the difference? Right. So,
I mean, I will say ray tracing does make a difference. Reflections actually working in game is pretty crazy.
I think there are certain graphical sort of developments that did make a difference and some that don't. Like, for me, I think that there's obviously a limit to like what both frame rates and resolution can do on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can definitely tell the difference between a game that's 30 and 60 FPS for sure. But I think like past 60, I'm not, it doesn't matter much to me. And if a game's, like, running really badly, like, sub-20 FPS, like, you know, Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, I think, had, like, problems with that and stuff, you can tell then. But, like, generally speaking, most people can't. Same with the resolution. I do think ray tracing makes a difference in certain games. Games are, like, you're in a city or something, and there's, like, a lot of, like, reflections off of buildings mm-hmm. and cars and stuff. That can actually increase immersion.
Yeah, it can look... But I do think it's completely optional. We've had windows and mirrors in video games for, decades now. And I don't think you actually ever really needed to see, like, a clear, crisp reflection in the background. I mean, hey, you want more graphical fidelity in your games. You want more immersion. Yes, that will give it to you. But hey, did you need it? I don't know.
So he mentions how the SSD changes things a lot. And I'm kind of inclined to agree. I actually remember saying like 10 or 15 years ago, like loading times are some of the most atrocious things in gaming. Yeah. Like when you can take loading times down, you don't have to give me anything else that makes my experience way better.
I think a good example of that for me was the Spider-Man game on PS5. Just the fact the being able to just swing across that city with virtually no loading, I thought was mind blowing. because there was just so much to see, so much was going on, and I would try to swing as fast as I could, and like I would get a hitch every so often. But I remember, you know, when we were kids, the like
so-called, when you would leave an area and
yeah
stuff.
Like when we were kids, open world games, open world, I tried to do air quotes with this hand, that did not really work. You know, you're used to, like, you get to the edge of the map and the next part has to, like,
load.
Has to start loading.
I remember even, like, you know, pop in and texture loading. I know it's kind of cut down on a lot of that, where, like, you kind of, you're walking to an area and, like, it kind of has to, like, load the textures in, so it look really, like, bad at first, and you get closer to them, they get better. I know with that Ratchet & Clank game on PS5, that's one that I wanted to play, it, part of the gimmick of that is like that you get kind of teleported between like different planets at different points in the level. And that was only possible, they said, due to like the PS5's SSD, because like they wouldn't have been able to do that with past technology. Like they just wouldn't be able to like load it fast enough for it to seem seamless and all of that. So like I'm down for that. But I think he's right that like if there's a PS6, I don't know how much noticeably better the graphics would be able to be. And if that would be enough of a selling point.
And at that point, well, what makes a PS6 a PS6 if it doesn't have better graphics?
Yeah, particularly when I think about how this generation works, a lot of the, you know, current gen is like PS4 games. Like so many games are still being released on like all consoles because what the PS5 offers you is just kind of the ability to run a PS4 game just at a higher frame rate or at a better resolution. But it's not like you're not getting something that feels exclusively possible on the PS5 in many cases. So
I don't know. Maybe they shouldn't make a PS6. It's like make a PS5 2.
Well, my question,
make it more modular.
See, they made a PS5 Pro.
Make a PS5 Pro 2. I don't know.
Here's my question. When do you think the PS6 releases? Like what year?
No sooner than 2027.
Yeah, he's been saying, and he says that it feels right, quote unquote, for the console to launch in 2028. Although he does not, you know, he departed Sony earlier this year, so that's just his musings about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think 2028 sounds okay. I just don't think that, I think that like anything sooner kind of feels like, sometimes I feel like we haven't even like really started this current generation, despite it beginning in 2020.
Yeah, but 2020 was one hell of a time to start anything.
Yeah, I know. It just feels like so many games just, I don't know, I guess I, like, what games have defined this generation? I don't know if I could count them on one hand. Right? Like,
Cyberpunk.
Cyberpunk, yes, although it defined it with, like,
there was controversy. There was a lot of controversy.
Yeah, like, so I don't know. Like, I know there's, like, a God of War game on PS5. There's been a bunch of Last of Us remakes. Horizon got a sequel.
Oh, I know. What's it called?
Ghosts of Tsushima, Yotei?
Not that one. The one with the, you're a guy with a sword or a spell or... so it's a Souls-like game.
Elden Ring. Yeah, I guess Elden Ring. Yeah, defined it.
Oh, I was lost, Paul. Yeah, I knew what I wanted to say, and I couldn't remember the name.
So I think 2028 would be fine. I'm sure that, like, I guess the PlayStation fanboy would probably be like, 2027, give it to me sooner. But, like, I don't know what you're expecting to change.
I don't know what they're going to give you here. I mean, we're getting a new GTA. I mean...
Yeah, that's next year.
Like, it'll be weird to drop a new GTA, and then they drop, they're like, all right, time for the PS6. It's like, oh, that's weird timing.
Yeah, I think they gotta wait. Well, speaking of next-gen consoles, Xbox also, we got a little bit of some tidbits. So, Sarah Bond, who is the current CEO of Xbox, I believe is her title?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, anyways, she was doing an interview with Mashable. Now, the interview was about that new Xbox ROG Ally X, or just the two ROG Ally Xbox consoles. But the interviewer, late in the interview, asked her a little bit about the next-gen Xbox as well. So, anyways, the interviewer asked her about it, Xbox president Sarah Bond, and she spoke in vague terms about what Microsoft is going for with its next-gen console, suggesting it'll be a premium hybrid PC and console. Here's her quote. The next-gen console is going to be a very premium, very high-end curated experience, Bond said. You're starting to see some of the thinking we have in this handheld ROG Xbox Ally, but I don't want to give it all away. So I guess that's a reference to the recently released ROG Xbox Ally X, which costs $1,000. And there is a less powerful $600 version as well. So now Xbox fans are wincing at the thought of how expensive the next-gen console will be, particularly in the context of recent price rises to Xbox Game Pass and the Series X and S.
They must think we made a money.
Yeah, what do you think? I mean, what do you think she means by this? A high-end curated experience.
It means that whatever you thought was too expensive before is not even going to compare to how expensive they want to drop. And it really feels like she was kind of like saying under her breath, you know, gaming's a luxury hobby. And, you know,
yeah,
only like a certain type of person can afford it.
That's kind of the impression that I got. I worry because it's like, I mean, this is without even getting into all of the other issues that Xbox has been having. I just don't think that like people can afford $1,000 for like anything. But
it's crazy how casual these companies are getting with $1,000 being the price for anything.
Yeah, I know. And Xbox in particular, like, they've had these price hikes on the series consoles, and those things already aren't selling that well. So, like, I mean, I don't know who they think that they're going to be catering to. Now, some people think that what she's describing is, like, this thing that's going to be, like, it's just, they're going to sell you a PC. Like, here you get a gaming PC.
Which, that is the second thought I had, is that they're just making essentially a home PC.
Yeah, and, like, it just kind of has a little Xbox logo maybe on it. But, like, you're not going to... How would you feel about that? Would that, like, change your mind at all about the perceived value? Well, okay, putting it in this framing, you said that, like, you know, you spent about $1,100 upgrading your gaming PC. If they were to offer you that same gaming PC, and it's, I guess, called an Xbox PC or something, and it's, like, $1,000, does that feel like a decent thing? No, yes?
No, I mean, the whole benefit of building a PC is that it's a modular experience that you can switch out parts and upgrade at your own pace and your own leisure. Buying the Xbox console PC thing, unless it's just as modular as a regular gaming PC, that just sounds like a terrible investment.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. It's like, because if it's going to be an Xbox, then like you're not going to be able to really swap anything out, maybe like the SSD. But if it's just a full-on PC, I mean, maybe that's a way of introducing people to the idea of PC gaming. I still don't know that it would...
Because I'm not going to lie to you. I love the fact that, you know, the current power of my computer is not, it's not like top tier anymore. But I love the fact that I can just upgrade my graphics card and switch out my SSD, and I can functionally have a new computer.
You can refresh your... Yeah, exactly. I don't know. You know, obviously she's being pretty coy about this. And I like Sarah Bond. Like, I don't envy the position that she's in.
I mean, I like her too. But like, and I say that as in I don't know her, so I can't dislike her.
Yeah, I don't know. I followed, you know, like this Xbox gaming news. You know, like people project a lot of hate onto Phil Spencer. He's...
Whenever you bring up Phil Spencer, you know, I don't know why I think about this. I think of Jack Spicer from Shaolin Showdown.
Oh, wow.
No idea why comes to mind.
Yeah, like, I don't envy these positions that these people are in because, like, I think at this point, it feels like the company Microsoft has taken a lot of the reins with the decisions around Xbox. Like, I think they're trying to make that sector profitable over everything.
By any means, they do not care necessary.
About the games part, they want money. And so, I mean, I'm sure that she's still subject to a lot of oversight and decision-making. But I hope for the best for Xbox. That's all I can say. I mean, good luck to them. Hopefully they can release something that's not $1,000. Maybe she meant high-end just in terms of graphics and not price.
Thoughts and prayers.
Yeah, something like that. Okay, last little gaming story. This one's kind of a sad one, but it's... I don't know how to call it amusing, but it's something. So, did you know that over 5,000 games released on Steam this year didn't make enough money to recover the $100 fee that it cost to put a game on Valve's store, research estimates?
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't know if you guys have ever, like, scrolled through the Steam, like, massive like library of games, but Steam is huge.
It is so much bigger than people think.
Like, I think with the amount of games that are probably in people's purview, it makes up maybe 20% of the entire like Steam library. Like the other 80% is random. Sometimes indie, sometimes niche, but a lot of it's just garbage.
It's just garbage.
And I'm not trying to say that every, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, dissuade game like game developers from trying new things and just trying to get their first games off the ground. But I've seen some trash.
Yeah, I mean, there really is some junk on there, and I know exactly the type of junk you're talking about. I mean, I'm not gonna name any names, but like a lot of,
I think we're thinking, yeah, of, we're the thinking of the same name.
Thing. And there's a lot of just visual novel junk. Like, and I'm not saying that visual novels are bad. Like the genre of visual novels is fine, but there are a lot of ones that are like very low effort, just bottom of the barrel.
Or like the puzzle games, they're just like a badly done version of Bejeweled.
Or like the barely functioning simulators. Like, some people kind of like those, like, shitty... Even the Friend Slop, even. Like, some of that...
Yeah, like there's just a lot of just
for junk. Every Friend Slop game that, like, ends up being really popular and, like, popping off on Twitch for a week, there's, like, 100 Friend Slop games that, like, never, you know, get a sale. Anyway, here's what they say. 8% of the releases from 2025 so far are estimated to have grossed over $100,000. But 40% didn't even see a return on their $100 release cost. He's referring to the $100 Steam Direct product submission fee. So to put your game on Steam, you got to pay him $100.
Makes sense.
Which is not refundable, but it does get recouped once your game reaches $1,000 in adjusted gross revenue.
So once you make $1,000, they'll give you back your $100.
Which sounds funny to say, but like it sounds like a lot of games don't.
Well, at that point, you may might as well hold on to the $100.
Yeah.
You made $1,000.
So I guess it's almost like an application fee for... You know, an apartment or something, mm-hmm. or like a security deposit. I don't know,
but
it's
also kind of like a punishment for uploading some like low effort trash.
Mm-hmm. So I thought that was kind of an interesting statistic.
Oh, I should say this: not every game that doesn't make its $100 back is actually trash. Steam is incredibly competitive, and getting noticed on Steam is kind of like getting noticed on Twitch. Good luck.
Yeah, I think that is a good thing to mention. It's like, you know, we're not saying, I don't even know that this article is suggesting that like these games that didn't make their money back are bad.
Not
like,
all of them.
I think some are probably garbage, and they know that they're releasing trash on here. There are some that people probably worked really, really hard on. I remember there was an article, we maybe talked about this in the podcast, but or it was kind of a side thing to an article of like how important it is to like pick the date that your game releases.
Okay.
And like, you know, Steam has like certain programs for kind of doing advertising for certain indie games. So you mm-hmm. want to get into those programs and kind of release your game on a certain day and all that stuff. Not stumbling onto the same day that like another popular game of your game's genre is coming out. All these different things. So sometimes you can be unlucky and like your game just might not be seen by many eyes, but, I just thought that it's both amazing and a tragic statistic, I suppose.
I mean, it's tough. Game development is tough, and getting like Steam is like the biggest like name in PC gaming. So of course you need and want your game to be on Steam, but that just getting on there does not guarantee you a dollar. It guarantees you a loss of 100.
Yeah. But you can draw too by doing a little bit of pot, which is what we're about to do as we answer these viewer questions.
Ooh, I'm so excited.
Okay.
And I just can't hide it.
So this one comes to us from YouTube. This is actually from Kyrie Brown. Question for the pod.
All right.
I saw this on Twitter or X. One must go. EA, Square Enix, Bethesda, or Konami?
Well, this is easy. Or actually, it's not that it's easy. There's too many good reasons to knock off these companies.
Yeah, so I will admit that I don't think I've followed individually all of these companies' releases as of late. Like, I obviously know a lot about Square Enix, sort of, actually. I follow Final Fantasy, but I know they publish a lot of stuff. Konami, I know they recently did, like, the Metal Gear Solid thing, and, like, they make Master Duel, so I mean, I guess, you know, gotta give them some credit for that. Bethesda and EA, I'm not as aware of. So
Bethesda fell off.
So do me a favor. Whoa. Look up recently released games by EA, and I'm going to look up recently released games by Bethesda, because I want to know what they have been like. Just to get an idea.
What I know is they're not releasing things I play. Though, of course, like EA, their big claim to fame right now is going to be Battlefield.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. I got a latest game section for EA. So EA's latest games, Battlefield 6.
Obviously. Yeah, that's a huge one. I know that's doing
well. FC 26, that's the soccer game. Skate, period.
Oh, yeah.
NHL 26. Madden 26.
All the sports.
Madden Mobile. No, not a 26. College Football 26. F1 25. That's the racing one. Split Fiction. Businesses and Hobbies. That's a game, or is that a section? No, it's a game. It's The Sims 4 Businesses and Hobbies expansion pack. Yo, they are still adding expansions to The Sims 4.
Well, do you remember there was a headline about that they were not making a Sims 5 because they were like they don't want to rip away everything that people got from The Sims 4.
I can't believe
The Sims 4 is
still more.
My sister plays The Sims 4, and like the expansions never end. Like they have so many just expansion packs and little item things.
Okay, also released The Sims 2 Legacy Collection.
Well, here's what Bethesda's been doing, which I guess is a little bit less than that. They made Starfield, and obviously, you know, they made stuff like Fallout and The Elder Scrolls.
Yep, not but impressed.
As of late, Starfield in 2023, Doom Eternal in 2020, Deathloop, that was a game from 2021.
Yeah.
Dishonored, I know that was one I think I liked a little bit. Yeah, they haven't made as many games recently. I'm surprised. I think they did a Skyrim remastered of some kind, but like they have not made a new Elder Scrolls entry this like last gen, have they?
Well, Bethesda and those have had like staffing changes, like pretty aggressive staffing changes in the last like.
They were also bought by Microsoft.
So the Bethesda of today is not the Bethesda of yesteryear, and so you can't actually expect them to. Well, do what they've done in the past. And it shows. Because they kind of can't get through a release without a problem nowadays.
So I guess if I had to pick one, I'm booting Bethesda. Not to say that I think they're awful, but like I don't really even personally enjoy like a lot of these games. Like I was never a Skyrim kind of Elder Scrolls guy. I know those games are very critically acclaimed, but I just... You know, you're asking me the question. EA. So... Oh, you're knocking EA?
I'm knocking EA off.
So everyone loses their sports games, Alec? You're getting rid of all of Madden 26 and...
I'll cry about it later.
I don't think you'd cry at all. I mean, do you play those?
No. I mean, I played Madden in the past. Would I play again? No, not really.
So why EA?
Oh, man, this EA ruined the Battlefront franchise.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
EA, like, I've played Battlefield... And I've liked Battlefield in the past. But then when they announced that they were going to remake the Star Wars Battlefront franchise, I was like, okay, this can be pretty cool. Then they essentially made Battlefield, but Star Wars. And I hated it. They took a precious childhood memory of mine. And they made...
Added a lot of microtransactions, I remember.
Barely enjoyable version of it. Like, the game wasn't trash, but it wasn't half as good as playing the original Battlefront or Battlefront 2. And for that alone, I will knock EA clean out. I would rather trade away the many hours I spent playing Battlefield 4 than have to remember the Battlefront 2 remakes. Or the Battlefront remakes.
Yeah, for me, it's Bethesda only because I just don't know them. I mean, I just don't play many of their games. So I don't think that's a great reason to boot it out, but like if we're having to pick one, that's what's going to be. Cause
I mean,
like,
I'm not even against that. Yeah. Did I enjoy Skyrim? Sure. It's fun to mod. I have never liked the Fallout series. I've played Fallout. Don't like them.
I gotta keep Konami because they make Master Duel. Although I hear they're like shit.
I'm not Konami to be honest with you. Like,
I don't. Yeah, like to be clear, because I know someone's gonna like say this, I don't really know like anything about the other video games Konami makes. Like, I have no clue what else they make. I know they made Metal Gear Solid, like the new Delta thing, and like that's kind of it.
Like, as far as video gaming goes, I'm not Konami out. Like. And then you might argue that I should knock out Square, but sadly,
I like Final Fantasy.
I'm too much of a Final Fantasy fan. Yeah. You know, but like, if we were never gonna get another Final Fantasy game, then sure, I'd knock out Square.
That is true. I don't play much else. Wait, you're gonna lose Dragon Quest too.
Never mind. Square is here forever. That's a franchise I can't do without, despite the fact of taking all year and a day, or years
and all decade and a year
to make the next Dragon Quest game. I'm waiting, Square.
All right, well, here's our final viewer question. This one comes to us from the submission forum down below in the comments. You guys can always use that. YouTube, community, or submissions. Both work for questions. This is from Cooper regarding Yu-Gi-Oh! Video games. So, why do you think Konami hasn't made a new high-budget video game? They could make the coolest Yu-Gi-Oh! Game where you could go around and battle people like in the anime and do tournaments like the anime. Basically, a high-budget Yu-Gi-Oh! Game like the anime. Why do we think they have not made one?
Because making a high-effort video game costs money, and that is not what Konami's in the business. They're not in the business of actually spending money on like Yu-Gi-Oh! That's not something they want to do.
I think,
and just be clear, we're talking about Konami Japan. Konami US has basically nothing to do with that.
Yeah. So I actually made a really good video about this over on the main channel. It was kind of centered around like Yu-Gi-Oh! And VR, but it does still touch on a lot of the things that your question mentions. You know, to sum it up, Yu-Gi-Oh! Cross Duel came out and failed. And I think that for Konami, they see like one kind of game that fails and do that well, and they'll never take another risk again. Because, I mean, you see like Early Days Collection is just a fucking glorified emulator.
And I mean, even Cross Duel was still just like a kind of low-effort attempt at like a freemium game.
Well, sort of, but Cross Duel did, and this is, in fairness to Cross Duel, they put a lot of work into it, but I just don't think that like it landed with people. Because like they got a lot of English voice actors in for that game that I didn't know they had. And they recorded a lot of like interesting things for like, you know, you could get to know the characters and develop these bonds with them. And, you know, like I always thought that was really cool. But I think that's also a part of the game that nobody ever saw or got to or appreciated. Because like fundamentally, I don't think that Yu-Gi-Oh! Could afford to have a third active gotcha game. Like, think about it, right? You're a Yu-Gi-Oh! Player and you play Duel Links, Master Duel, and now you're being asked to play Cross Duel.
And the TCG.
Yeah, and the TCG. And you're like, you know, you're asked to play this game that's like a third set of gems and microtransactions. And I didn't play enough Cross Duel to know, but like I've heard that the shop was brutal.
Oh, I know. I'll tell you. It was.
Yeah, they said the shop was, it was very, like, pull rates were rough, gem prices were rough. Like,
I would actually argue it was worse than dealing with Duel Links.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's probably just the budget. I think that they probably can't get approved for the budget. And that's a shame because I think more than anything, what Yu-Gi-Oh! Kind of needs in its games right now is something that isn't just the cards.
A real Yu-Gi-Oh! Video game. But the thing is, right, we're in a gaming industry where every company wants to make a new freemium game. Every company wants to make a Genshin Impact. Every company wants to make a Fortnite. So it's even harder to argue for them to make a real Yu-Gi-Oh! Video game.
Yeah, so hopefully it can happen. I mean, I would like to see what's going on with that Yu-Gi-Oh! VR demo thing that they had. You remember the one?
Yeah, that's all they had.
Yeah, I feel like, have they just stopped?
I think
like,
it's done. I honestly think that they completed the mission.
All right, and then second question, last one from this thing. Is there any universes beyond that Magic could cross over with that would almost force you to buy and build a deck? I feel like you've already kind of had yours, right?
I feel like they did it already. I mean,
was yours Final Fantasy?
Final Fantasy and Lord of the Rings, those were just such like large things for me, and now and they're already doing like Marvel, so
they've kind of hit you.
Like, and they're never gonna do Gundam, and they're never gonna do Digimon. Like, when I think about the other franchises in my life, they can't get a Universes Beyond set. So
yeah, I mean, they did like a Sonic Secret Layers. If they had done a Sonic set, that probably would have forced me to try it out.
They could probably get away with that. Sonic is a huge franchise with a stupid number of characters.
And Sega would be more than happy to
actually give them that license. Again, Sonic is popular in the West. They could probably get away with it. I could see that.
My only other one for me is like Harry Potter, maybe. Like,
I feel like that one's likely, though.
I feel like that could happen. Like,
I feel like in 2020, like 2028, it's happening. Eight, like, yeah, that for might sure. announce that.
I would play.
It's going to come out with the new show.
God, that might actually happen. Like, yeah, I mean, I'll cave if they do like a Harry Potter Universes Beyond. I will build my like one Commander Harry Potter deck or two or three of them, and then like not actually play Magic.
I mean, you know, the different houses could be different, like color archetypes.
It's literally called Magic the Gathering too.
Yeah, it just so it like, it will, if they did it, it would work really easily. Like, would it be kind of boring in a weird way because of how natural it is, in a similar way to Lord of the Rings, where it just kind of works? Yeah, like it's in a weird way it's boring.
Well, I've got a challenge for you guys for next week's questions. Ask us some spooky, scary Halloween themed questions.
Nope, I'm not answering.
Yeah, leave those in the form below or in the YouTube community, and we'll try to answer some of them, because I'm planning, hopefully, something kind of spooky and fun for Halloween.
What is a spooky question exactly?
I don't know. You can interpret that however you like.
Oh, now I'm scared for a whole other reason.
Yeah. All right. That's been it for this week's podcast. Hopefully you all enjoyed it. We were glad to be able to start your Thursday, and we hope you have a good rest of it.
We'll see you guys in the next one.
Pass turn.